Think that's everyone in. Hello, everyone. Sorry for the slightly late start. My name's James. I'm director of Shoreditch Town Hall, and I just wanted to welcome you all to Stamp Connect. For the purposes of captioning, I'm a white man with a beard, slightly longer hair than usual, I think, like all of us, wearing round framed, clear framed glasses sat on the sofa in front of an orange wall. Welcome to Stamp Connects. For those of you who are joining for the first time, Stamp is a network of over 50 organisations based in London who work together to take practical action to improve the ways in which artists are supported by our organisations and valued more widely in society. Stamp Connects is the biggest event we run every year. It's normally held in person at Shoreditch Town Hall. This is the fourth year, I think, we're doing it. But of course, this is the first time that we're hosting the event online, for very obvious reasons. Before I hand over to Michael, who's chairing today's discussion, and let him introduce the panelists. Oh, I'm just going to check. Could everyone mute themselves? Because I'm getting some feedback. If that's all right. Great. Perfect. Thanks very much. I just wanted to run through a little bit of housekeeping. So all sessions are captioned via Otter AI. To activate closed captions, please click on the closed caption button at the bottom of your screen. Or that can be found by clicking on the three dots at the bottom of your screen. Then click view closed captions. You can also view a full transcript of the event by clicking on the top left-hand corner, which will open a new window. Please only use the chat function to post your questions to the panel, which Michael will be managing later on in the session. Please also keep yourself on mute, like I've just said throughout the session. That would be great. If you have any trouble with the tech or with Zoom at any point, then please do a direct message me, so James, on the chat function, and I will do my best to help you out. We're going to record the session with a view to sharing the audio file on the Stamp website afterwards. If anyone has any concerns about that, then please also private message me on the chat, and I can talk to you about that in a bit more detail. Then the last thing just to say is that the session is being BSL interpreted by Laura and Laura. Laura M is BSL interpreting first. We've spotlit her, so hopefully everyone can see her. And we will have a moment just halfway through the session where we'll take a pause to swap over between the two BSL interpreters. Great. It's really lovely to see you all. Thanks so much for joining. And I'm going to hand over to Michael.
Thanks, James. Hi, everyone. My name is Michael Norton. I am a white man with a beard, got some brown, uncut COVID hair, and I'm in a room with some plants and a Bridget across in the corner. So thanks for joining us today. Today, the conversation is called Where We're At, and I'm going to be kind of slightly participating on panel as well, in that I work for an organization called Arts Admin that I'll be speaking to you about in a moment. The focus, you know, we were talking about developing this idea and why we wanted to call it Where We're At, or what to call this programming conversation. And for those of us that work within organizations or festivals or venues, it's been a challenging year. So we thought that the best way to support artists right now would be to give as clear and as honest of a perspective of what it means to be on the side of developing programs for artists and what we're hoping that looks like in the future, what that looks like now, and how we're adjusting it. So I'll just tell you briefly about Arts Admin, and then I'll introduce our panelists. So I work in an organization called Arts Admin. We are a producing organization. We represent artists' projects on all scales. We work mostly in kind of site-specific work, contemporary performance, on local, national, and international level. I work in the artist support team, so we develop projects of support from bursaries to one-to-one support sessions that are free, maybe you can book into them, to workshops that we run about every month. And just are constantly thinking about ways of how we can be supporting artists more. And we can talk more about that as this session unfolds. But I wanted to turn over to our panelists here. So we have three people who are joining us from three different organizations that I think gives a really nice picture of sort of what it looks like to be in the landscape of performance and theater in this year in London. So Sue, I was wondering if you might want to start us off and just introduce yourself and let us know a little bit about where you work and what you're up to.
Grand, thank you. I'm Sue Amos. I'm sitting in my bedroom. There's a mirror behind me. I'm a white middle-aged woman with black rimmed glasses and a sort of blue top that's patterned. My pronouns are she, her. I work for the Young Vic Theatre in Waterloo in London. I'm the Associate Artistic Director. From some of the names on here, I know that you know the Young Vic, but maybe everybody doesn't necessarily. It's on the Cut in Waterloo. It's got three auditoria, the main house, which seats about 450 to 500, the smaller space, which is the Maria, which seats about 150, and then the Clare space, which seats about 60. I guess in terms of, you know, it's hard to talk about what you've been doing because it's been so different in so many different ways. We've programmed some work over 2020, The Unforgotten, which was celebrating specifically black people in history who've been maybe not as recognised as they should be, hence the name The Unforgotten, which has been on the outside of the building. So we've had a presence, even though we've not necessarily been able to invite people into the space. We also did something called A New Tomorrow, which was a whole selection of work written by nine writers, directed by our Genesis associate, Jen Tang, just celebrating where people's minds were at that time when we did it. And we also celebrated in September our 50th anniversary, which was very strange, standing on the Cut with people heckling you as we were trying to read out speeches celebrating 50 years of Young Vic. But kind of quite apt. Kwame Kweyamara is the artistic director. He's been there since 2018. So again, we've been in a bit of a transitionary period. All through the pandemic, we've been doing taking part work, which is our work with local residents, schools, colleges, and young people. And we've had a whole range of different work online. We did Under My Barbie Duvet, which is a bit like a zine done by young people about their response to where they found them at in their bedroom. And we've also done three films as part of 2020, written by, obviously by writers, but it was meant to be an in-person with community projects like Thames Reach and Blackfriars Settlement, but we moved it online to keep the safety of the participants. And that's three films that you can go and see on our website, which is amazing. And then for the Directors Programme, which has got a membership through the Genesis Network of about 1,500 directors, designers, movement directors, lighting designers, producers, we've been doing online work. So we used to do probably four things a month. We've probably been doing four things a week. Through the pandemic, it's moved in different places. We started with wellbeing because that felt like what people were asking us to do. We then moved on to more craft and career. Just recently, we did something called Five Plays, where five directors with five writers made five pieces of work that we are live streaming actually tomorrow. So we've been trying to as much as we can. We've had focus groups, as everybody's been doing, to ask what people need and how useful we can be. We did something called Creative Headspace, where we invited all 1,500 people on the network as if they wanted. It was only £100, but it was £100 where you could have at least an afternoon knowing you were paid to look at your practice or to go for a walk or to write something. And so it was really interesting. We asked people only to apply if they felt that they needed it or they'd had financial, mental, emotional hardship. And it was really brilliant to see that people were very careful about stepping into that space. And there's about 350 people we provide that to. And we also gave bursaries or money to a small number of directors who'd been part of our Juried Assistant Director scheme that we knew were particularly finding it hard. In terms of what's going forward, we're opening the building in April and the Cook Bar will be open again. We're getting staff have been in the building kind of all over the pandemic, except in the lockdowns. We're beginning to get ready for producing. So we'll be announcing our season later in April. Obviously I can't tell you all of that because we'll be announcing in April and I would get killed by our marketing department. But some of the work we're doing is shows that have existed that we knew we wanted to. So I know some of you might know that we've announced Hamlet with Kush Jumbo, and that was something that we had planned before the pandemic. We've also had to postpone our Genesis Future Directors Award production, and that will be going ahead over the summer. And there will be a whole range of different productions that we didn't know about that we have only now commissioned and made since the pandemic. And that will, again, like I say, be announced in April. So I think that's me, really. I hope that gives some kind of indications about 5 minutes.
Busy. Thanks, Sue. That's great. That's a really nice overview. We can dive into some of those things and try to understand sort of what's changed about them and how they evolved over time. But that's really great. Thank you, Sue. Next, I have on my screen is Anthony. Anthony, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about where you're coming from?
Yeah, sure. What an act to follow, Sue. Bloody hell. So I'm Anthony. My pronouns are he, him. I'm wearing a purple jumper. I'm a black man with, like, I think a half decent kind of small afro going on. Probably about 6 weeks ago, Liverpool, my football team, lost. And I shaved my head because I was so annoyed with them. So, yeah. The growth is coming back. I am sitting in the house that I grew up in, and I am in front of the piano that I haven't touched since I was probably about 20, which was 20 years ago. So that's who I am. I am also the head of program at an independent producing company called Fuel. What have we been doing? What do we do? We work with any and everyone who we're really interested in. I think the way that Kate, who is our director, Kate McGrath, the way that Kate and I essentially work with artists is to find people that we're really excited about and kind of push them to really tell us what their most scary idea is, and then we try and help them fulfill that mental idea that they want to bring up. So, you know, why shouldn't we have a play in a swimming pool where the audience know how to can feel themselves drowning and sinking into a swimming pool? Why don't we explore that? So things like that, are what we are up to. And sometimes they're amazing. So we have brilliant projects such as Barbershop Chronicles that was written by Inua Ellens and toured nationally and internationally. And then we have equally exciting but slightly smaller on the scale of budget projects such as Rachel Young, Thirst Trap, which was a small project that essentially was a project that fit in a box and you sat in a bath and listened to an audio piece, which was spoken by the wonderful and amazing Sharon D. Clarke. So those are some of the things that we get up to. Yeah, kind of like Sue, what have we been doing? It's been absolute madness, to be honest. It's you know, a world pandemic. So we've essentially been trying to make sure that our family, our creatives, our freelancers who we work with and on the sector as a whole are getting money. And we've been trying to do that in lots and lots of different ways. Some of them have been to, you know, move projects around, move timelines around so that we could focus on development ideas that we had coming up in kind of 2 or 3 years, but pulling those forward. So allowing the artists to work on those ideas right then and there and being able to pay them money to do that so they kept themselves busy and, you know, were able to pay bills. Some of them were setting up something called the Freelancers Task Force, which was giving a voice to freelancers who make up over 70% of our sector but weren't being heard in really important conversations within the sector, and making sure that we were bringing on lots of partner organizations who could offer a fee to a number of freelancers who could be part of that conversation. What else have we been doing? Recently, we did a really small but beautiful project with some lighting designers, who we felt were some of the most hard hit of our freelancers. You know, without a building to light, there are a lot who just had nothing. So we came up with an idea where they lit, they designed a show, a lighting piece around a tree that was local to them. And were able to, again, garner a bit of a safe audience, obviously, with COVID-19 among us. But just giving them an opportunity to A, get some money, and B, being able to kind of work on those creative muscles that they hadn't been using for a while. And then, as I said just before, our main kind of push has really been working on ideas for digital platforms, being able to work with different organizations to put different shows on. And also work with our artists on our development slate to, start thinking of ways in which their work can be seen, in the not so distant future. So that's what we've been up to.
Great. Thanks, Anthony. Again, lots there that we can, sort of dig around in and understand how it's grown, over the last year. So thank you. Okay, and last on our panel, but certainly not least, is Teo Lawson. Teo, do you want to tell us a bit about your work and what you've been up to?
Hi, hello. I am a black dude with dark black circular glasses that match my rather slightly round face. And I am trying to save everyone from seeing my sadly unkept fro by wearing an orange hat. it's like a little, goes a little bit over my head. I'm sitting under a window, which is making the top of my head quite hot. So I hope that's not too offensive an image to you guys. But it also means, because the light's up here and down here, so hopefully it's a bit more contoured, you know what I'm saying? I'm referring to my jawline there, which has, that disappeared over lockdown. Don't know where that went. Too many Jaffa cakes. What else? In a slightly sort of grey top. If I sometimes have to speak quietly, my son is napping, and sometimes I may need to have a little ear out to see if he starts crying and screaming his head off. I am associate director of Kiln Theatre in Northwest London, in the borough of Brent. We are a sort of a just under 300 seater capacity theatre with one main house. We have predominantly done new writing, although that's not necessarily, we don't necessarily refer to ourselves as a new writing theatre. And we sort of refer to ourselves as proudly local with a very international perspective. But I guess being in Brent means that we on our doorstep have, you know, in most schools around the borough, you know, over 100 languages are spoken. There are people from a plethora of cultures and backgrounds. So being local inherently means being international. Because we want our theatre to be a theatre for all, for everyone to feel entitled and feel safe in the space that we run. So therefore, you know, being local is being international. And we went through a capital project recently. We reopened in 2018, and the whole idea of that capital project was to open up the theatre and to sort and to find a way of making a space that was a theatre for all, making it more accessible and more accessible to a wider spectrum of our community. And that sort of puts us in a very interesting position, because as we plan to reopen in May, we are one of the few theatres in London that have experienced a sort of reopening in recent years. So there's some learning from that, but also some trepidation from that, knowing how tough that was. It's going to be a very, very interesting experience when we reopen in May. Today, we've just announced our upcoming season, which is very, very exciting, very fun. So maybe it would be helpful to take you guys through that. Would you guys like to hear what's coming up? Is that good? Yeah. So we will open the season with Reasons You Shouldn't Love Me, written and performed by Amy Tring. It's her first play, of course, but she's a sort of seasoned performer. It's a co-production. It's a really beautifully wide co-pro. So we're co-producing this with Payne's Plough, 45 North, Women's Prize for Writing as well. And it's a beautiful, funny, heartbreaking play that, from the perspective of a young woman in a wheelchair, and the complications around that. It's gorgeous. We're really excited about that. The second play is a remount of The Invisible Hand, written by Ayad Akhtar. We staged that in 2016, and it sort of centres the relationship between the power of capitalism, the relationship between capitalism and the nefarious impact that it has on Islamic communities. So it's going to be interesting to see how that speaks to today and see how audiences receive that. It's directed by Indy Rubensingham, who directed it originally. The creative team is the same as the original creative team in the 2016 production. So we'll see what comes out of that. Show three is NW Trilogy, which I am directing along with Susie McKenna. And it's a trilogy of short plays performed as one event in one night. And the plays are written by Maura Bufini, Roy Williams, and Sahela Al-Bushra. And we were, it sort of came out of a project that we ran to try and understand the local history of our borough, but particular mind of migration into the borough, and the impact that migration had on the borough, but also to the country as a whole. And so each story centres around specific communities that made home in Kilburn and the wider political impacts that they had. So, for example, play one sort of looks at the Irish community and the impact of dance halls. Show two, written by Roy, looks at Trojan records, Trojan music, and reggae music, and the impact, the cultural impact that Trojan had. And show three, written by Sahela, looks at the Grunswick dispute and the powerful leadership that Jayab and Desai showed in 1976 and for the subsequent years of the protest. That's going to be really cool. And Wife of Wilsdon is an adaptation of Wife of Bath, written by Zadie Smith and directed by Indra Rubensingham. The first two shows we're looking at socially distant productions. So that's going to be an interesting challenge for us. But we are hoping to be able to take the restrictions away for NW Trilogy and Wife of Wilsdon, because those are bigger shows, and it's going to be really tough to maintain the sort of socially distanced idea and restrictions at that point. So we're hoping that those restrictions will be alleviated by September. What else? During the lockdown, we've been trying to stay as busy as we can. We've been able to, that the fundraising department has been working so hard. It's insane. They are incredible, as they are in every theatre organisation, whether you're building a company, I'm sure. And we've been really lucky to be able to commission a further 10 writers through the incredible work that our fundraising team has been doing, so to make sure that we can keep offering opportunities to the freelance community. We were really inspired by Fuels want and drive to have conversations with the freelance community. And so through Fuel, we managed to keep up with our freelance family. We continued the agency, which is a project sort of attached to Brent 2020, the London Borough of Culture, which is essentially to support young Brent-based entrepreneurs between 15 and 25 to develop some of the ideas that they have for social change in the local area, which is just, I can't, yeah, it's just amazing. We've had, like, you know, any, from the podcast that come from it, it's just a fantastic thing to see the brilliant local young minds just fizzing and yeah, being empowered. It's just amazing. We've also been doing running Food for All every Tuesday, offering free food to those in our community that need it. And what else? Yes, we've tried to create online content, most recently something called Kiln Collaborations that discuss some of the lesser celebrated collaborations that happen in theatre but are integral to the theatre making process. So for example, the relationship between designer, costume supervisor and actor. And complications around you know, perceptions of beauty, body image, etc., and how you find creativity in costume supervision, as well as, you know, being able to collaborate with the actor to sort of find the right vision for the character. And we have also recently recruited a new associate designer who will be mentoring two resident assistant designers that we are in the process of recruiting at the moment. So it was an open submission, and we've had over 100 applications for that position, and so we'll be going into interviews, etc., for that pretty soon. So we have been trying our best to keep doing what we want to do, which is you know, tell interesting stories that puts you know, marginalized voices into the mainstream. Whilst it's been tricky through the sort of hard work and perseverance of our team, the tenacity of our team, and the leadership of Indy River Singham, our artist director, we've managed to keep going. Hopefully we will thrive once we open. But I'm sure, like everyone else, we are anxious to sort of work out how that's going to go and how best to do it. I will stop talking because I've spoken for a long time and I can be quite boring sometimes.
I can tell. We're just going to do a little BSL swap. Cool. Switch back to gallery view. Okay. So, lots in there. Thank you, three, for sharing your the work and the details of the program. I can say that this year, from even from an organizational side, we feel very siloed. I don't know if you experienced this. Feels very very much like I don't have as much access to knowing what's going on in the arts world. So it's really beautiful to actually sit with you three and hear, like, oh yeah, you've been working too. Stuff has been happening also over there. I guess my thought first off, when we thought about this conversation, and what I think about, when a lot of my job is that I'm just speaking with artists on a daily basis in one-to-one settings. And what I think, is useful is a sense of understanding that there is, during a pandemic, when we're isolated already, that there is a sense of kind of adrift to the abstract, of like, there's a perception that arts organizations and different people who work in the arts are sort of over here, and then people who are freelancing, people who are artists, people who have, you know, a challenge to reach them, the limited bridges that were there already, like the foyers of theaters or the conferences, those have slipped away. And there's much less access than there ever has been to just understanding, for those of us that have permanent positions in organizations, what we do or what we're doing, unless it's through call out, you know, like this is sort of the way that we communicate, or through blog posts, or through potentially showing some work. But, I guess the question is, from, you know, this is a big one. It could go all day, but it's just like, what has it been like for you in your organization collaborating and building these projects amidst that uncertainty? And you know, how have you found ways to reach, or how are you finding ways, to reach out to the community of artists or freelancers that you used to work with? You know, like we talked a bit about freelance task force as an example, which worked, I think, beautifully. But even that, there's not an allowance of being together physically. So, if any of you just want to, chime in on that, like what have been the challenges of being alone so much, and how are you continuing to develop and grow the communities that you care so deeply about, as demonstrated by your amazing work you've talked about so far?
Nah, Sue, I saw you on mute there. Come on, Sue.
I thought I was just being polite, Anthony. I thought you might want to go. Shall I have a go and then you have a go? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, you go.
I mean, you know, first thing is that I've got to recognize the privilege with which I have, you know, a job, and therefore, where the different levels of kind of challenge that people have experienced. I mean, I think in some ways I've been really lucky, because like 5 times a week I've been in Zooms with artists in terms of the workshops and kind of discussion groups and town halls that we've run. And I think that has meant that we felt quite connected, and we also started artistic associates. So we've got 15 artistic associates, some of whom are international, some of whom are based in the UK. And that ranges from somebody like Alfie Enoch, who's an actor, to Wendell Pierce, who's also an actor but based in the States, to Zana, who's a sound designer, to Kat Shoebridge, who is a director. And so we've had access to quite a lot of people in terms of coming together, and we've paid them. We've been kind of obviously recognizing their labor in terms of coming to talk to us, so we've paid people. And I think what we've tried to do as well is we've had a series called Young Vic Demystify, and it's trying to get a sense of trying to reduce the opaqueness of not necessarily people understanding what's going on in specific organizations or generally across the sector. I think it's been really difficult in terms of all of the stuff that was coming out from DCMS or from UK theatre. And so we had various sessions where, you know, Jack Gamble would come along, who's the associate from Arcola, and talk about his work that he's been doing in terms of lobbying. We've also had Kwams, who's had open sessions where people can come and ask, you know, what he's been doing. And he's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes and appearing on most television programs across the pandemic, sort of talking about what needs to be done from a government perspective. So I guess it felt like we've tried to keep those conversations open, and that doesn't stop people feeling that they don't know or that we're close to them. But we've been trying to gain from it. And so I've been doing every Friday kind of one-to-ones with whoever wants to kind of pitch up within a 4-hour period, which means getting a really strong sense of what people's preoccupations, hopes for the future are. And all of that has been really useful.
I was going to say, Sue, so what in those like channels that you've kept open, what have you learned, or have things shifted, priorities changed? You know, what are you seeing as the needs or the ways that you're supporting artists now that feel different?
I mean, in some ways, I think if you'd ask Kwams, he'd say that kind of nothing's changed in terms of that we want to be an intersectional, inclusive, sort of all welcoming theatre with a program that achieves that. But I guess what has changed, I think, is that sense of we were beginning to try and make things more transparent, and we just need to do that, because there is such a sense of, for people to make informed decisions as to what the change is, I think there's also a sense of needing to understand what it looks like now, and not to replicate or continue what exists now, but to understand the structures in order to unpick them. I mean, obviously you can just knock the fucker down, but I don't believe if we do knock everything down that our delightful government or the DCMS are going to, okay, here's an open plan, kind of make whatever you want. They'll just go, oh, well, you knocked it all down, guys. You artists are all kind of bunch of idiots and we're now walking away and we'll just go to the commercial sector. So I think we need to share knowledge and we need to be really open. And I think the Freelancers Make Theatre Work report is a really strong starting point to do that.
Great. Yeah, I can say that from Arts Admin, the challenge of transparency is just all the more, like that was a really big priority of ours that we kind of stated explicitly at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And then a lot of that transparency was about interacting with people in person and about having conversations where there was a sense of liveness to it. So the added challenge of that being within reporting and structures when there's a sense of constant cancellation or like needing to reframe or, I can just say from our side, it's taken some really intentional focus and work around how can we remain transparent when we're sort of as an organization and like as individuals within an organization dealing with a sense of crisis, dealing with a sense of our own, you know, home stuff, home care, home needs, and really caring about maintaining the integrity of the transparent, clear agenda that we communicate with our audiences and with our artists. It's challenging. Anthony Oteo. Yeah, Anthony, you were going to say.
Yeah. I think for Fuel and for me, just going back to the Freelancers Task Force, that came from a really random idea that Kate had, which was having Friday evening drinks with any freelancer who wanted to join our Zoom conversation. And I remember at the beginning it was really lovely. It was really great to see some faces, you know, people you know, and I'm sure everyone's done it in this Zoom, you know, you just quickly go across the screen to see if you know anyone. And it was amazing to see those connections happening. So, I think that's been a massive change for us. There has been a moment where as an organization, we just decided to be more approachable. And the fact that it was Kate and I who would take time out of, you know, everyone here, that kind of the last few hours of the week are sometimes the busiest when you're just trying to tie some things off. But to put that time in our diaries to just meet artists, not for any reason than to have a cup of tea or a gin or a rum, if you're me, then that was like the first kind of step that allowed us to understand that none of these voices were being heard in those conversations. So that's something that we've tried to take through, and Kate and I are already starting to think about how that can move on into the real world whenever that starts opening. So that's one thing. And I think, being more accessible is something that's really been at the forefront of my mind since I joined Fuel a few years ago, and we've done some really great work on our website. It was, you know, I can say it, it is being recorded, so damn, but it was atrocious. Like, it was literally the most inaccessible website, and we got a comms person, Gemma, who essentially spent, you know, the first few months of her career at Fuel just working on making sure our website was accessible for all types of different people. So that's been something else that we've really had to push, and make sure that we're able to do in terms of being more open. So yeah, those are just the two things that I wanted to say, Michael.
Great. Yeah. That approachability and accessibility, I think, is a big, point. I'm wondering, have you found that maybe, I make up this story that maybe there's things that are actually make you more approachable during a pandemic. Like you're talking about the ability to tune in. And can you talk a little bit just about who's been like what happened when you opened up to this Friday evening, Zoom what has the approach? Who has approached you? How has it shifted?
Good question. It started off obviously with just people that we knew. We just sent out an email to loads of freelancers that we worked with, and that was actors, directors, lighting designers, sound designers, like literally everyone. And sorry if I've not mentioned one of the creative titles. You're all amazing. We love you all. But yeah, we had loads of people turn up on that, on the first few actually. And essentially it was everyone just going around introducing, and you'd have those conversations saying, oh my God, Michael, I've not seen you in 3 years. What have you been up to? And then, after about 2 or 3 weeks of it being essentially the same conversation, people started asking for a bit more direction, a bit more of a reason behind these conversations. So we started putting questions out, and seeing what people wanted to talk about. It wasn't the greatest of moments in terms of themes. So obviously Black Lives Matters was a huge thing, at that moment. And I say at that moment, cause there are still people who think it was in that moment and it's done. But anyway, that's a different panel talk. And we focused on that, and that then opened up a conversation about making sure that there was a manifesto of how Black creatives should be treated in a theatre. And we brought a range of different people, from different avenues who wanted to specifically focus on that manifesto, which got released, I think, 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And once we had kind of, you know, actioned what we were going to do on that, the freelancers then decided what they wanted to talk about next. And so really it was driven by them. There was a lot of information given as well. They wanted to know what was happening in those conversations. And then the idea of them being involved in those conversations was brought up. I think now, we've stopped that because it feels that, people need something different, and people really wanted to be meeting in person. So now we're thinking of ideas of how we can make sure that it's something that's regular, but in person and safe as well.
Yeah. Great. Thanks. And Taya, what comes up for you as we talk about this, about the, you know, keeping on doing what you're doing and the challenges of this separation of the artists and you and,
I'm a freelance part-time associate director of the building. So I am incredibly fortunate to have a little bit of a regular income coming from Kiln. But I've also felt the impact of, as a freelancer in other ways, jobs falling by the wayside. And so I've sort of had my foot in both parties and both camps, of course, being a very, very privileged, member of the freelance community, having, you know, a sort of regular association with the building. And so in that capacity, personally, being able to talk to my building as a freelancer, and talk to freelancers as a member of a small part of the building, has allowed me to sort of try to bridge that gap. Personally, also, I think it's been a challenge to keep loving it. I think a lot of, you know, I've personally found it very, very hard to have conversations with people who may be interested in coming into the industry, knowing how hard the industry is, knowing that they are opening themselves up to what can be a lifetime of at point exploitation and financial difficulty, et cetera, we all know. And so that has been a big thing that we have spoken about of how to keep the passion alive amongst our freelance community, amongst our freelance family, to keep them loving it, to keep ourselves loving it. Of course we do, but individually there are times where you question that. I shall move on because I don't want to get too somber. I think as a building, we have been doing, you know, taking regular meetings with freelancers as part of freelance task force to hear freelancers, to listen to them. And of course, you know, this year we have the opportunity to, like other organisations, to reevaluate our business plans and look to the future and make sure that this listening and this learning is embedded and entrenched in the new business plans that we are creating, the new mission statements, the new vision for the theatre, and those tweaks that we need to make to make sure that the learning that we've done over the last year, hearing freelancers, hearing the qualms and hearing the problems of the industry, to make sure that it is a part of our DNA, that we are working towards making an improvement, that we are working towards making an improvement in the industry and being better. The other thing that came out was making sure that we are working with new artists. And so trying to set internal goals for each show to make sure that we are employing a new artist all the time. Do you know what I mean? That it's not just the same creative team jumping from one show to the next. Is really, really important for us. And also, you know, the other two fronts is, as we mentioned before, you know, fundraising. We have been working really, really hard to make sure that we can raise the funds to commission writers, to continue to commission writers, to continue to give money to freelancers to do what they want to do. I don't. In my time of being at the theatre, I don't think we have ever had this many commissions. It's sort of crazy. And that's been through the generosity of various trusts and foundations and particular organisations who really believe in what we want to do, which is, as I said before, to sort of bring marginalised and unheard voices to the mainstream, and make sure that we are, you know, making theatre for all, that we are consistently accessible. And that we are offering opportunities to as a diverse range of perspectives as possible. So we are very fortunate to have raised that money in order to continue to set with the writers that we find exciting, or new writers to us that we've discovered in the last year. And also these two new resident assistant designer positions that we have are also about trying to diversify the people that are going into being a theatre designer. Doing that, it's not just the same demographic that the predominant demographic in that field, that we are giving opportunities to those that have had difficulty breaking through, or haven't necessarily seen a way that they can be a part of the party too. You know, that's cool. I think that's mainly from what we've been doing in the building. But I think it's an ongoing process, you know, because I think, you know, as you've been saying, it doesn't end now, just because we're sort of like thinking about reopening the building. Right. So, you know, the relationship has to constantly be evolving, has to constantly be getting better, because as I said earlier, I find it difficult in all honesty, I'm not sure how comfortable I would feel sitting down with my 14-year-old nephew or even my daughter and saying, hey, you can be a director one day, or hey, you can be a designer one day, you know? And that is insane, knowing that I do this. And that is, you know, that is insane. So that, you know, we know that something has to shift and has to change, and we've got to work incredibly hard to make that happen, because I would love to be able to turn to my daughter and say, oh yeah, you want to go into musical theatre? Yeah, great idea. Yeah. I can't do that now.
Yeah. So I appreciate you bringing it in, because like this, I think the thing that I resonate, well, the thing that I'm experiencing over here as you talk about it is like, I have been asking and I've been hearing a lot of people, both who work on the producing side or on the freelance side, and also on the artistic side, of the conversation of like, why do I do this? And what is this? You know, like I think that it can't be understated what it is that for many of us, to not be able to touch and see what it is that we are here to do for a year, and the impact that has on confidence and on clarity. Sometimes I feel a little dizzy, just like, with the trying to remember and hold on to something that was and that hopefully will be again. And that like, we're in this like suspended period. And I guess I just want to say to all of you who are out there who you know, work in physical spaces, it's said all the time, or maybe you don't hear it, but just to say it again, this is an unbelievably difficult and challenging moment to not be able to do what you do. And that's not, that will knock confidence, that will knock clarity, that will like shift your ability to think. Like, I just talk to artists and freelancers all the time, and there's a sense of like, I just don't know which way is up right now. You have every, you know, reason to feel that way. This is what it is to not have thing you do as an accessible, or as a, for us at least, the really terrifying thing is that nothing is concrete. We've had major cancellations time and time again, like four rounds of major cancellations have happened in the last year of projects that have been planned for 2 years, 3 years. So, that knocks confidence and the sense of security. And yeah, I agree with you, Taylor, that like, it's sometimes it's a little challenging right now to be like, yeah, go ahead and try this out in the industry. But that's, I appreciate what the three of you, what I hear this, well, we're going to turn to questions now. I just want to say what I hear from the three of you is that you found ways of bringing artists in and engaging with artists and engaging with creatives, engaging with people who work in this industry, and giving them a space to share that and not just do, but also to talk. You know, I hear like the town halls and the task force and the open meetings and like the receptivity that, is there. So I just want to say an appreciation for that from you three for really bringing that in. Let's bring over to some questions. If there are things out there, if you're wondering, we didn't talk much about kind of the more like, how do you submit a proposal to us? if you have some more practical stuff, or just questions that come up throughout our conversation, you can either chat them, or if you want to just shout it out live, we're happy to hear your voice and see your face too.
So how do you submit a proposal?
Yeah. So maybe, because it's the three of you, if you like, what's changed in the way that you're looking for work in the last year? How are you finding work, in brief, or what could you say to Clara to help her out on her journey?
Well, as head of program, I'm being more prescriptive. Like I think it's been difficult. I've worked in other buildings, before, and there's definitely a sense of, throw us something and we'll come and see you, or we'll have a chat. And, actually the amount of work that takes to put something across, go and have a tea, and then for nothing to come from that. I've just seen that loads of times, and I've worked in arts development. That's kind of been my background. So with Fuel, we're now working on trying to be really clear on who we're looking for, and how we do that. And that's, and we're going to be putting that out quite soon, but essentially, we'll have different ways of doing that. So there will be, hopefully, a commissioning process where, and it'll be an open commissioning process where people can put in ideas, and it'll be something in the way that you can just put in an idea and it only takes 5 minutes to do that. It's not about kind of having to spend half your day putting an application process that is then given 2 minutes to be read. So that's going to be one way. And then there's going to be direct approaches from Kate and myself. We're making sure that we go and see as many different pieces of work when we can. and following those up and being really honest and saying, we like your show, but we're not going to be the right producers for you, and here are some producers who would be better for you than us. Or let's have a conversation and see where this goes. And then also we've got a family of creatives who we already work with and who we're already in conversation with, so we'll be taking those forward. So those are the kind of three main strands in how we're going to be doing that and how that's changed.
Great, thanks, Anthony. So, Teo, do you want to add anything to that? Or again, I know that sometimes the how things get found is there's no clear sort of ABC. So if anything comes up.
I think it's the thing that I'm asked the most and really understand why, which is how do you program and how do we get to be kind of on the slate? And I think it's really hard to describe the process because it's not linear and it's not singular. Like you say, it's not do this, do that, and then, you know, you'll find yourself on the main stage in the Young Vic. And I think in some ways, again, just for complete transparency, is we're not set up to receive proposals. That's not the way that work ends up in our spaces. There's the Genesis Feature Directors Award, which is open access. Anybody can express an interest in terms of within the parameters of what it is. And I think moving forward, that's going to change, but we want opportunities that are open access for people to express an interest. And exactly as Anthony says, trying to make that as light touch as possible. I think that's the real learning, is that how much effort, thought, creativity goes into making some applications for something that, as again, as Anthony says, someone, you know, cursory goes, that's just not for us. And so it's lighter touch moments. And this is my big thing, so do forgive me, is I just think pitching is the wrong word to use. Pitching means that you throw something, people either catch or they drop. It's about establishing relationships and not thinking I'm going to make this thing because it fits the Young Vic or it fits Kiln. Make the work you want to make and find the people that want to make it with you. And that's a long process and a difficult process. But just really honest, getting a piece of paper with an idea on it will be a great insight into you. And it might not be that piece. It might be something in 6 months, 6 years time, but it's about that kind of exchange of what you want to make, why you want to make it, who you want to make it for, and why you've got to make it. And that's the beginning of a conversation, not a pitch where you're kind of going, it's a mix between, Jaws and Towering Inferno and stuff, because that's just a bunch of shit. And it's really useful in terms of the film world. What they will give you is a log line, which is you need to be able to describe your project in a sentence. And that's why the film world's actually really useful. That's what they do in terms of short film. And I think probably even the feature is that just be able to describe what you want to make and why in a sentence and focus on story. Even if it's non-linear, focus on that and emotion, not on issues.
Michael, sorry, just to jump in, we're just going to swap BSL interpreter again. Cool.
So, Teo, did you want to add anything to that? That's great advice, Sue. Really clear, supportive language, I think, for people who are... Yeah, I would love to have an hour session with you coaching an idea. Teo, what do you want to add to this?
I mean, you know, I think what we've just witnessed is the reason why Sue Emmers is a genius. So let's just take a moment. God. I think similarly to what Sue said, you know, Kiln sadly is not set up in the way to have open submissions in that sense. We have a new work associate, Tom Wright, and two associate directors and an associate designer, and Indu. We are the artistic team, and we work incredibly hard to read as much as you possibly can each week and have in-depth conversations each week. So you're constantly taking in new things, but where we get those new things is usually through channels that are established, through channels that we know that we can manage, and even then it's stretched, you know. I think we have, as I said before, I think we are making internal commitments about making sure that we can see more new work, more work by a varied number of artists and understanding internally how the channels work, how we handle meeting new artists, and how you then get to meet us, how we get to know you, etc., and how that relationship is built. And so that is clearer, and that is more defined, and also manageable. So I think that is the big thing that we are on, we are about at Kiln, is that we don't make promises that we can't see through. That if it is a meet for a coffee, that is for a substantial reason, as opposed to giving people hope that doesn't amount to anything. It's far better to let someone down early than it is to let them down late. These are the fundamental beliefs that we have at Kiln, that Indu has, and that I have too. I think that I've just had a brain fart and completely dropped it. But essentially it's that, I think we've been very, very clear, as I said before, this is the greatest amount of commissions that we've had since I've been there. And we've been very clear that it's not just about, having meetings, but it's direct and defined possibilities and opportunities. It's sufficiently paid, with a chance to make work, and I think that has felt the biggest priority, to put money in the pockets of freelancers so that they can keep doing what they're doing.
Great, thank you. I appreciate you sort of naming that there is a lot of consideration for what is going to be asking the least from artists as early as possible in the process.
Another thing that we had a meeting this very morning about needing to call a few people, because I think one thing that has been recommended over this year is that if there are submissions made for an opportunity at a theatre, that it doesn't end there. That theatre that we stop trying to think of these theatres sort of like these individual monoliths. That if there are a group of five people that didn't quite make it to interview, but aren't quite ready yet for that possibility, probably, but are still really exciting, that we can pick up the phone and talk to whoever at another theatre and say, hey, there are these five people.
Yeah.
Listen, person, for the opportunity that we know that you guys have or are thinking of having, we would like to meet these guys. And I think that's, I think, important for us, because if you do invest that time to submit something to us, then we can help you maximize the impact of the time that you put in to submit something to us, by communicating with our brethren more,
Yeah, I appreciate that. So a good challenge for us. Yeah, Anthony, is moving on to.
I've just realized that you've had three people who are like, we all don't accept open calls, but there are organizations who do. And I'm not sure if, I know there's marketplace sessions as part of Stamp. And I'm not sure if some of, the places where I used to work are going to be there, but, Barbican run Open Labs. It's a program that I built and ran there for a while, and it's still going on. And that's a really, really great way to get in to the theatre team within the Barbican. It's down in the Pitt Theatre. You get a week. It is an open application. It is kind of a bit laborious, if I'm going to be honest. But you do get some really great support. I haven't scrolled over, and actually still here, so I'm going to name check her, but Paula Varjak, that's how I met her. And that's like a relationship that I, has grown from strength to strength over a number of years. I've worked, with Shoreditch Town Hall, as well, another great organization, who do again accept open applications. And I know they've got some marketplace sessions, so definitely check them out. So I think across the Stamp network, a lot of those people in the marketplace, they are your go-tos for talking about people who do just have that chat with people and will try and take on some of those ideas.
Yeah, great. And I think just to say that it's good to discern, like, when is there an open call for a specific commission and when is there just sort of a general open door? And, at least I can say from an arts, there's always an open door for an invitation to share, to work that's being shared in particular. I think that's, you know, in short, the best way, it feels a bit like chicken before the eggy kind of thing, but like the best way to get your work known and presented is for us to know you and to see your work. So just sharing that with as many of us as you can is like, it's part of our job to be receiving, you know, invitations and coming to your work. So, okay. Thank you all. I know we're over time. Really appreciate the three of you joining us today, and sharing what's been up. Hopefully, for those of you that joined us, you get a little better sense of where we're at or where we've been even. And I look forward to meeting all of you in different ways over the next coming weeks and months. So thank you.
We're all now looking at each other in a weird way. I'm really sorry, I need to go to my next inevitable Zoom, but thank you for that. That was really nicely chaired, Michael, so thank you for bringing us in when you did.
Sure, thanks, Sue. Thanks for sharing what you did. Beautiful to hear about your work.
Lovely to see you, Teo. Now you're kind of actually here and didn't go to the toilet.
Yeah.
I can't believe you've made it the whole time.
Yeah, you probably needed wee now, though, don't you? So you better run.
So bad!
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, I've got to run. It's lovely to see you all. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura and Laura.
Thanks, Laura and Laura. See you later. Bye-bye.
Again, nice to meet you guys. See you later. Bye-bye.